Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Let's podcast.
Should we get into it?
Yep.
Oh, outstanding. Right, hands in and pod on three. One, two, three.
Pod.
Hello, Egg Chasers. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, a podcast that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We just love the game of rugby, and it's the usual trio. Myself, Tim. Hello. Hello, JB.
Hello, Tim.
Hello, Phil.
Hi, Tim.
We're off the back of a famous series whitewash for England, 3-0 drubbing. We've already done a podcast with the boys from the Green and Gold podcast, our Aussie counterparts. Download that as well. And in fact, if you just subscribe to iTunes or Acast or wherever else you can find the Egg Chasers podcast, then we will make sure it gets delivered straight to you. You don't even have to go to the trouble of going and finding it, and leave your iTunes reviews and stuff whilst you're at it. Thank you very much.
Did you find the Green and Gold podcast your most favourite podcast you've ever done? Just this last one.
How do you mean? The last, what, after doing it, talking to a couple of Aussies who've just seen their team hammered?
It does sound like something you would love to do.
I like to think I wasn't as smug as maybe you
as
might imagine,
feeling.
As I was maybe feeling, yeah. I reined in the smugness.
I would have struggled. If that was Wales, I would have struggled.
Yeah, you have this real incredible talent, JB, of being both a horrendous winner and a horrendous loser.
Yes, yes, I do.
Right, so obviously we talked at length about England there, so we will temper that slightly on this podcast. Won't talk about it loads. Although I will just say that lots of people have been, lots of other people have been using our trademark phrase, prize-winning Marrow, elsewhere, and saying and pointing out it's been an incredible season for Marrow Itoje because he's gone 26 games, 26 starts, unbeaten.
Unbeaten.
However, no, that's not true, boys.
Is it not?
That's not true. Because he was a Remainer and he lost the referendum.
So have that,
Marrow. That brought him back down to earth.
How do you know he's a Remainer?
He came out, didn't he? Yeah.
He tweeted the night before.
My favourite tweets from the Remain thing was, did you see the Lindsay Lohan tweets?
I couldn't believe I was watching on Thursday night.
I know she has tweeted something. What did she tweet?
She tweeted a few things. She was obviously a Remainer, just very sad to see what's happening, can't believe it kind of stuff on Thursday night.
She was a Remainer that crossed over the line into Remaniac.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, on Friday morning, I was very sad about the whole thing, despite being a Leaver. By Friday night, I was thinking, no, screw you all. You absolute bunch of... just the whinging. The whinging and the Facebook statuses. I was took to reading Facebook statuses out onto videos and then sending them to the people that actually put them up to show them how stupid they actually were.
I was a Remain, and I was horrified by some of the Facebook statuses.
Please delete me as a friend.
And
I'm ashamed.
The sour grapes from the people who are signing the petition for a revote is pathetic. It's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, rugby, I guess. That's what we're here.
I'll tell you what. Let's take the format of the referendum that's proved so divisive and put it into the rugby world.
Ooh,
so
yeah, let's do that.
So, Phil and JB, you two can decide one or the other, see if we have consensus or we have a split team as well. So, firstly, Steve Diamond or Richard Cockerell in a fight, who do you back? Who do you put
Steve
your money
Diamond.
On?
I would probably also back Steve Diamond.
Steve Diamond, 100%.
Okay.
Steve Diamond is... So he's, And if he's losing, his enormous Alsatian will come and maul Cockle to death. Yeah, exactly like a dire wolf.
You've got to remember as well, Steve Diamond, who is Steve Diamond? He played for Trafford Metroviks, had a reasonably good career. He's not part of the Leicester dynasty. He's got to where he is because he's excellent and he's well-awed.
Diamond's a bit older, though, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah, I think so. I'm just looking him up. Steve Diamond's 47. Richard Cockerell.
Cockerell's into his yoga now, isn't he? He's like sort of peace, maybe he's peace loving.
Yeah, we might find. Yeah, and you might be able to wheel kick. Oh, that's the other thing.
2 years difference. Cockerell's 45. Cockerell 5'10", 17 stone. Diamond 5'10", 16 stone. Although that's their playing weight, so I'm not quite sure they're
Diamond
the same.
Diamond has got that. It cuts a figure of like a silverback.
Exactly.
Kind of, and the way the way he snarls on the touchline, it's quite intimidating. It'd be a good matchup though. All right then. So future saviour of the world, prize winning Mauro Itoje. If you had to make him next prime minister or next king, which would you want Mauro to be?
He's got to be king, hasn't he? There's no way. No, I don't see Mauro knocking on doors and asking for people's permission to do stuff. No, he's a king.
He tells people what they're going to do for him.
He's a ruler, not a leader.
All right.
Exactly.
Your favourite, or well, your most or least favourite, or which pre-kick ritual you would choose. This suggestion came in from Complete Toffee on Twitter, whose work I particularly love on Twitter. Thank you very much. Dan Biggers, tick-to-tick, full-on bossing over. Or Nick Evans's, as Complete Toffee puts it, Nick Evans's tiresome air wank.
I mean, air wank was the name of my high school band, so I'm going to go with Nick Evans.
Oh, I like the big arena. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, I like that as well.
And when you actually watch it, some of the videos, the little vines, when they've put it to music, is very, very, very good.
It's really, really funny. That actually happened. So I was working at the World Rugby Under 20 Championships, and it's particularly funny. We were playing music whilst the referee was doing his warm-up, and a referee was on his own on the whole pitch, and he was doing little steps and side-to-side jigs, and it just looked like he was dancing to the tune. So I really liked it. Anyway, Jay Wood tweeted us to at Rugby Podcast, said, best/worst broken nose, Mike Tindall v. Jack Berger.
Ooh.
I'm going to go... I can't go another way, can I? Because it's a referendum. You've only got two options.
Two options.
So I'd go with Ernst Joubert. worst broken nose. Well, here's the thing. Jack Berger is going to lead a life of farming, hunting, you know, in the wilderness with a knife between his teeth. Whereas Mike Tindall is going to go to state banquets. So... in terms of worst, it's got to be Mike Tindall because it's least suited to his future life of living it up and going fox hunting.
But Mike Tindall's his nose is actually quite straight, just off to the side. So from top to bottom, it's in a straight line. It's just pointing one way, whereas Jacques Berger is pointing in about five different directions.
Yeah, that is true. Your thoughts a little bit like Eddie Stevens, who tweeted on this topic at Rugby Podcast and said, Jacques wins this one for me because he has a broken face, whereas Mike Tindall just wears his nose at a fashionable angle.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right, then. Just a couple more. DJ Hat, this should be a quick one. So quick fire ones. This is Chris Howell. DJ Hask or MC Corbs?
MC Corbs, all day long.
Oh, DJ Hask for me.
What?
Okay. Patrick Logan tweeted and said, Miles Benjamin or Leslie Vinicolo?
Oh, Miles Benjamin.
Benjamin.
Dan Wright said, worst hair, Castro Giovanni or Alan Wynne-Jones?
Oh, they're both bad.
Ooh, that's interesting, isn't it?
Castro Giovanni, now he's got the eagle's nest.
Yeah.
It's not great, is it?
No, yeah, but great. Alan Wynne-Jones' hair isn't dissimilar to... Who's a Scottish lock who plays for Newcastle? McLeod.
the coach.
It's got a kind
coach.
Of...
what did you call him?
Transsexual witch.
But a heavily made up... He looks like he's wearing so much makeup.
Transsexual witch. Oh, man.
Would that make him a man? Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Oh, amazing. All right, then. And maybe a more of a rugby talking point. We haven't really mentioned Bristol since there much because the England matches. I'm sure Bristol fans who listen to the podcast would have been like, wow, are they talking about Bristol as much? We'll get much more into that through the off-season. But just a quick one. This one was suggested. Bristol, should they sign, if they only could sign one, a world-class coach or a world-class fly half?
Coach.
That's because you're saying Gavin Henson is a world-class fly half.
No, I'm not, actually. I'm saying Mitch Sheedy is a very good fly half. I think between Mitch Sheedy and Will Clough, they've got a really nice pair of halfbacks there. So actually, getting them into some sort of structure is probably better than getting rid of their young prodigal fly half.
I would go for that, probably. Although Mitch Sheedy is so unproven and so untested at that level that if they could get someone, I'm trying to think what calibre.
Like an Andy Goo, just to sit behind him.
Yeah, kind of like, but a bit younger and a bit fitter. Someone they're going to get kind of, someone who's like early 30s with a lot of experience of, say, Super Rugby or even Premiership level experience. Someone like a Stephen Myler, say. If they could get someone like Stephen Myler, I would go for that.
Oh, how about like a Brock James character?
Like a Brock James, if Brock James was 30.
I don't think they need someone young. I think they need someone there for one or two years.
Well, I'm not saying young.
Yeah,
I'm just saying,
at the teams Andy Goode's been at.
Yeah, I'm not saying young. They want someone with a lot of experience, but they don't want someone who's, say, 36 and pretty out of shape. They want someone who can steady the ship for 2-3 years. Like what Nick Evans did when he came to Harley Quinns. He was the best fly half in the Premiership for 3-4 years by a distance.
Don't they have another option at fly half? I'm sure they do. I just can't remember who it is.
They probably do. Well, they had Matthew Morgan as a potential option, didn't they? But
no.
And Henson as another option.
What an option.
All right, cool. And then, here's one as well. Very, very quick one. If you had to pick one in your rugby team, would you pick Boris Johnson or Nigel Farage?
Oh, we've seen the
destructive power of Johnson.
Both against a German politician, wasn't it, or a German footballer in the World Football game, and against a Japanese schoolboy.
That's true.
So it's got to be BJ.
It's true. There is one more big decision, this one. Cornerstone razors or Wilkinson Sword or Gillette razors?
There's only one obvious option. And my face isn't this smooth for no reason.
And it's very smooth.
It's very smooth. As is yours.
And what I like about the fact there is no sign of kind of rash or cuts or anything, but yet it's beautifully smooth.
It is. Yeah. Highly engineered, precision. Oh, no, German engineering. Can we still get Cornerstone? Is that safe?
Cornerstone have already did a preemptive trade deal.
Thank God.
To keep the precision German engineered shafts coming. Cornerstone all round, unanimous.
It's already been voted for by GQ. It won hands down.
It did, you're right. GQ Cornerstone. Magazine, the GQ Awards, it was the number one razor. So if you want to get, and loads of people have been sending pictures of their shafts. Thank you very much for the tweets of your shaft to @rugbypodcast. Loads of people are getting on board. And the great thing about this is, you hear us going on about this. If you haven't tried it, well, do you know what the great thing is? You might just think it's all smoke and mirrors. Try it yourself for as little as £4. Because of the £10 discount you get from being an Egg Chasers podcast listener, £4, you get your own engraved shaft with your initials or whatever you want on it, and then you can try it out for as little as £4, and there's no obligation, and we think you'll like it and continue, as many, many people are. So cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, or...
Egg 10 at checkout. So
right.
Smooth.
Right. Oh, just before we get into the actual proper rugby chat, I mentioned please leave your reviews on iTunes. I just want to mention this one from someone going by the name Espresso Martini, who said, "A Monday morning wake-up pod is more with the Egg Chasers is more intoxicating than Danny Cipriani's breakfast beverages."
I thought you say morning breath.
All right. So, as I say, download the England Australia special podcast to get that one, but should we start with the Ireland match as well, because that was another highly entertaining series, and the opposite of a whitewash. Fine margins
indeed, and you do have to feel for Ireland a little bit, particularly after the heart they showed in the first test. Indeed, the heart they showed in every test, particularly given how many players they've got missing, both before the tour started and throughout the tour, players getting injured. And South Africa in a little bit of disarray overall.
A little bit.
It was interesting how... I saw one comment on, I think it was on Twitter, saying that before the test, the Lions players, like Whiteley, the number 8, weren't good enough, and Combrick, the utility back, before the test started, despite being the form team in Super Rugby, the South, form South African team in Super Rugby, they weren't good enough. And then partway through, they were almost heralded as the saviours of the Springboks.
Exactly, yeah, because they're a relatively new team, these Lions lads. I don't think they've had any respect from the national team whatsoever, unless they've absolutely forced their way in. That's the only way. They've really had to play above and beyond what the incumbent has to even have a shout.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the... Ireland could have won it right at the end, but in that Faf de Klerk, South Africa have got a proper player, haven't they? He snaffled a little try in the first half. Oh no, start of the second half, and then or was it in the first
it
half?
Feels anyway. A bit raw.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but I mean, for what it's worth, I thought he was lying all over the ball after he flew out the line and made that tackle that was the last play of the game. I thought he was all kinds of illegal, but he ran out and nailed his man, and
he's Madigan-esque, right? In that every pass he throws is as hard as it possibly can be, without any real diligence as to where it may end up. And also, he runs around like an absolute madman. I wonder how long he can carry on playing at that tempo with that energy. He seems like he's got a fairly quick burn rate in of an international player.
Maybe. Another contentious decision that Ireland fans will point to and feel maybe hard done by. In the first test, it was, should a red card have been given to CJ Stander? We talked about that one then. In this one, it was, should a red card have been shown to Willy LaRue, who got a yellow for taking a man out in the air early in the game.
I can't see this. I can't see how this isn't a red card. According to the laws, this is a red card.
According to the letter of the law.
Now, do I want it to be a red card? Of course I don't. You know, I want all kinds of nastiness to occur, but this is a red card. This is as clear a red card, according to the laws, as I have seen in quite some time.
Yeah.
What I would like, because you've said, rightly so, that consistency is important and people knowing where they stand is important. What I would like is for the decision that Glenn Jackson gave to be what other referees align their view with. Mm-hmm. Because Willy LaRue almost got his fingertip to the actual ball itself.
Yep.
Had he touched the ball and then the same event happened, would we have said, well, fair play, that's just accidents happen? I think we probably would have done. And so I actually think I like that a yellow card was given and the reasons for giving it. And I think that was showing empathy for the game. But I can also completely understand why, having seen what we have seen, like you say, you'd be really, really angry.
There will be a case when two players go up in the air, there's some horrendous collision. The guy who won the ball initially loses it in the air. The other guy ends up with it on his chest and they're both out cold on the floor. And I think the idea of this law interpretation is to encourage players like Willy LaRue not to compete in the air, but allow that guy to land and then smash them. That's what I think they're trying to promote.
Yeah, and just on this, Willy LaRue was in the air and he was competing for the ball. He wasn't as high, but he was competing for the ball, and I think that does make a difference. Like with the Skelton in the England-Australia game, Skelton on Watson, I thought Owens handled that absolutely correctly. If Skelton had been on the floor, it would have been a very different outcome. Maybe not a lifetime ban, but you could see a yellow card in that scenario. But because he was actually competing the ball and he almost got his hand to it. So I actually think the LaRue thing was probably dealt with correctly.
But that said, Glenn Jackson said the player had no... he didn't say no rights. He said he was in no position to compete for the ball.
Yeah.
In other words, he was saying that it was reckless.
Yeah.
And the consequence was the player landed on his neck. Although Dara Ruddy tweeted to @RugbyPodcast and sort of highlighted how ridiculous the TMO and referee conversation was in this one.
Oh, is this the top of the back chat?
Let me read out Dara Ruddy's tweet. He said, I'm going to do it in that voice. I have a decision. The player has landed on his mid, higher, upper back, just below his lower neck area. It was ridiculous.
Oh my god!
Yeah, I do wonder why
they're going to start counting vertebrae. It's like if it goes below this vertebrae, it's a yellow.
D6. It's a D6. there's no way that wasn't a red. He landed on his head. I mean, he might not have landed first on his head, but he definitely landed on the back of his head. I mean, there's just no
So I think what we're saying is, on the basis of what we've seen previously, this was without question a red card. But there's an element where we're almost reaching, for different reasons and in different levels, some almost consensus, whereas in the circumstances we saw in that South Africa game, maybe in future that should be classed as more yellow than red.
Why don't World Rugby release a series of videos of like technical models? And what I mean by that is, this is how we want the situation to develop. So have a player competing in the air and find an example of a player waiting for this guy to come down and smashing him and saying, this is what we prefer. Show a situation where they think it's a fair contest, say this is what we prefer, and then show something like the Willy LaRue where, yes, it's a fair contest.
He's off the ground, but he's not going to be first to the ball.
We will penalise that because we don't want, even though that, I suppose, was legal, well, he got a yellow card, it wasn't legal, it did result in a player being bent double.
Falling from a great height onto his head.
Yeah.
But the point...
That's what they want. Tell us.
And the point about a lot of this, a lot of these challenges and a lot of the changes are trying to make the game safer. And also, there is a definite incentive. If LaRue had taken a yard off it, wait till he hits the deck, then smashes him, not only is it safer, but it's actually a much better outcome for South Africa.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he smashes a player back who's got no momentum and he doesn't get himself yellow carded. It's a coaching change that is being led because of a rule change or an interpretation of the law change. And I think it's a better way of doing things.
Because most players, when they have a ball in their hands and they see a defender, have got all the tools in their armoury to make it fairly safe and hard for you to tackle. This guy is looking up in the air. His ribs are exposed. He's only just landed. He's not travelling at any speed. Hammer him.
Yeah.
Take him downtown.
I do think maybe the effect it would have, and I've sort of said before that, and who am I to disagree with most rugby teams? I'm obviously wrong when I say this, but sometimes when you see an up and under go up and the territorial gain, you're making it a lottery that you gain 10 metres. It almost seems pointless as a tactic.
Oh, I love it.
When it's further, when it's a bit deeper and you're trying to get it, then I...
I think with those up and unders, right, if it is like 10 metres and you can walk to the position where it's going to land, then
that's
try
pointless.
And compete. So that's like a complete...
But the it's going to an NFL thing, which I know both of you love. The NFL 40-yard dash time. So the 40-yard dash is 40 yards because that's the distance of a punt. And to be doing it in under 4.5 seconds, that is the time.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's the approximate time that you can get under. So this, you want that distance. You want 40 yards, roughly, 35 metres. Oh. So if you can get that distance and have the correct chase, you get the maximum distance and the players there to smash them.
Ooh, wow.
And that was one of the things that England did exceptionally well in the first test.
Yeah.
Well done, Phil. Readjust your nerdy glasses now.
I like that.
Push your glasses right back up the ridge of your nose.
Different point on the island game. And let me throw this one in. I am going to say, and I'm not necessarily saying I completely 100% agree with this, I'm just being devil's advocate, Rory Best isn't the man to captain Ireland. And the reason that I'm only saying that because of...
Because he's not the man to captain Ireland?
His post-match chat where he seemed okay or pleased or... He didn't seem to be hurting like I would have, if I was an Irishman, like I would have wanted my captain to have been hurting. Like he was the semi-final of the Pro 12 when he was practically in tears after the game, wasn't he? I would almost want him to be like that. And he seems like, I'm really pleased. It seemed to me when I watched him, he's like, yeah, there was lots of positives to take out of it. We're really pleased. It's like, I was watching it going, no.
You should be hurting.
You should be barely able to utter a word. You're that hurt by
like
that.
Mike Brown's interview after the Wales game in the World Cup,
yes,
where he said about three words in the whole thing because he was furious. Yeah, I do kind of agree with that. The other side, they have performed above expectations in South Africa with a depleted squad, they are so close to actually winning the series, so he should be rightly on the side of no, we could have won this, or
I
we should have won this.
Watch a tremendous amount of Pro 12. I don't know if I've mentioned this in other podcasts. Now, I'm only going to do 15 to 20 minutes now on the Pro 12. But like the point being is, when I've seen Cronin play, I've always been impressed. I mean, he came on yesterday and he nearly ran the length of the field. It was incredible. In previous tests, he's scored. I don't see why he's not a better option for Ireland, or at least. Or at least admit that you're going to need him for the last 30. So Best is only going to play 60 minutes.
Yeah.
He's not the captain.
Well, Cronin is used by Ireland and Leinster as an impact sub.
Mm.
He rarely starts for Leinster in the big games. They prefer Strauss to him. So I think it is more that that explosiveness and that kind of ability in the last 30 rather than the solidity for the preceding 50-60 minutes.
I'll tell you a guy who I think so much more highly of now than at the start of these tests is Devin Toner.
Yeah,
Completely agree.
Brilliant.
I mean, the tale of this series maybe is a little bit of all of us in different ways and in different amounts and at different times have had to eat a little bit of humble pie. Me on Haskell. Mm-hmm. And
me on Teo? No, that didn't happen.
The Teo one was before when the squad was selected. You on Teo. All of us a little bit on Devin Toner.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely on Devin Toner.
Definitely.
I would physically laugh when I saw Devin Toner on a team sheet. No longer.
Yeah. But it was probably the same. It was probably a bit the same with Leo Cullen back in the day. You're like, he can't be any good. Look at him. He's all right.
He's very good.
He's very good.
Can I give you another Irish player who I thought was exceptional? He might have fallen off a little bit this week. I thought Luke Marshall has had a very, very good series.
I've been telling you about the Ulster centres, the centre options, and arguably the strongest centre wasn't playing in this tournament.
Yeah. Henshaw.
In McCloskey.
Oh, God, yeah. God, why he didn't go?
Yeah.
I mean, you got D'Alande, who is basically a sledgehammer. Why didn't you run him into McCloskey? I mean, McCloskey, to me, is the best centre in Ulster, but he can't even get in the... He can't get ahead of the people that he gets ahead of in his provincial team for his national team.
Yeah, yeah.
Very odd.
Yeah, quite incredible.
So lots of... I know it's horrible to say, and I'm sort of contradicting what I said about Rory Best, but then I'm not the captain. Lots and lots of positives for Ireland.
Yes, and even in that test, I mean, they had considerably more possession and territory, and they ran more than twice as many metres. They ran more than twice as many times.
Yeah, and it showed.
Yeah. They made half as many tackles. They missed one-fifth of the number of tackles that South Africa missed.
Did they?
But they couldn't get over the line, unfortunately.
Just overall, do you think there's lots of positives to take out for Wales?
No. I can't think of many positives, really. I mean, we have gone away. We've left what we're good at because it didn't beat the Southern Hemisphere teams. And guess what? The new thing that we're not good at also doesn't beat the Southern Hemisphere teams. Yesterday, I only watched the first half. I couldn't bear to watch the second half. I just couldn't. There's a couple of things. Without George North, we've got no attacking threat. I mean, George North is so dangerous that when he gets the ball, everyone is worried. And if you remember that first test, he just put his big hand in Surveyor's chest and ran around him. Well, now we're relying on lads like Hallam Amos, who is a great all-round rugby player, but he's just not going to make the outside break. He's not fast enough. He's not strong enough. He can catch. He can pass. He's competent. That's it. In fact, I'm going to say something horrible now. I think I'd have preferred to see Cuthbert play.
Wow.
And for this reason alone, Cuthbert is exceptional at one thing, which is running fast.
Into space,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas...
Or into touch.
Yeah,
he does that particularly well.
But I just think, like, if you need someone who can just do something, Tom James, I don't know if he was injured or why he wasn't involved. He's a very good runner who hasn't taken his opportunity at international. But those two boys, yeah, they're nowhere near as good all-round player as Hallam Amos, but at least they can do something. At least they offer a threat out wide. I didn't see anything of Jamie Roberts. And let me just save the... a sense of utter disgust with the scrummaging of Thomas Francis.
Oh my word,
God! I have not seen that since.
He makes up for it with massive work rate. Oh no, no, he doesn't
do that. I mean, I kind of get the idea, which is we've only got a handful of good front rows. Let's use the rubbish guys first and improve later on. And they kind of did that with Hibbard for a while. They bring him on late in the game to make an impact. Thomas Francis is so far away from an international player, it's hard to describe. I don't have a vocabulary large enough to describe how far away he is from international rugby. It's a farce. It is. I mean, if you want someone who could end up on the top of a New Zealand scrum and work harder on the park, I could do that. I could literally get battered as badly as Thomas Francis and be as bad around the field. Most of us could. I can't believe he is a Welsh international. I simply can't.
With that particular scrum where he popped up and over the top and ended up lying on top
of the... He's a 20-stone man. He's a 20-stone man. Right? And he must have been pushed up by his second row. I'm sure there's loads of technical issues which people will point to why this will happen. But ultimately, it's his fault. It is 100% his fault.
He got battered. What I thought when I watched it is, you know what it looks like when you accidentally squeeze your toothpaste tube too hard? It sort of crumples up. He just went a bit like that. It was.
But imagine trying to do that to a 20-stone tube of toothpaste. That would be harder.
It was incredible to watch. I mean, in the previous games, I've been sort of going, well, there's lots of positives. Wales have shown that they can attack and they can change the script. They've been convincingly beaten, but we don't. And again, we're not going to know until the end of the year, maybe even this time next year, how good the All Blacks are to understand relatively where Wales are, and we're not going to understand where this Wales team will be if they continue this evolution of the way they play.
Yeah,
don't know. It's all a bit of a waiting game, much like England. Like England haven't. People are sort of. I think I want to make sure we don't get ahead of ourselves because. In the autumn, we've got to play South Africa, and we haven't beaten South Africa in 10 years.
Wow!
In any home or away, haven't beaten South Africa in 10 years.
No, I'm sure you have.
I don't think we
have. Feels like you have.
Yeah, I can't remember. Well, I know we've had a couple of tours where we've
10 years.
Not
won. That seems like an awful long time to me.
I know. I think
we lost.
That's
We definitely lost twice in 2007. We had a tour in 2009 where we lost three times. And we played them in at least half a dozen home games.
I mean, Wales beat them last time that they came up here on summer tours.
Yeah, it does feel like we've beaten them at least once in an autumn international.
I may have that wrong.
Yeah, I can't recall off the top of my head.
Have to look at that.
So we're not gonna know where this Eddie Jones England team is until we've started again. Probably another Six Nations, and certainly the autumn internationals when we play these other sides. So we'll see. But I'm pleased that Wales are. Changing?
No, why? It's embarrassing. We don't have the players to do it.
Just on the South Africa, I've just checked Stuart Lancaster's record. He's played them five times, lost four, drawn one. So that's the last 4 years out of action. So it may well be right, the 10 year. Yeah.
Goodness me. Good old Stuart. Good guy, eh? That really laid those foundations.
He's a good guy. He's a good bloke. He's a great bloke. And again, I want to see the Rugby Championship because we don't know how good New Zealand are and how much the players they've lost have affected them. We just don't know. But
yeah.
I can understand.
It would seem not at all.
I can understand why you're disheartened.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. Maybe one of the most dangerous players, I don't know if it's against Wales or if this is genuine. I suspect it is genuine. But Beauden Barrett with ball in hand is unbelievably good.
Is there a faster 10 in world rugby?
No, I don't know. Certainly not as stacked 10. Have you seen the size of the boy?
Yeah, no, there's bigger 10s. There's definitely bigger 10s.
Yeah, but he is absolutely ripped.
Yeah, yeah. He's in good shape. But it's his straight line speed is exceptional.
And the handoff. He's got a great handoff. Yeah. And the step. I mean, maybe he must lack something in the kicking department, I would guess. But he's so dangerous.
Yeah.
And obviously, we touched on England. I'm just all kinds of happy.
One thing we did touch on the other day, in our preceding podcast with Green and Gold, was the man of the series. Now, I personally would give it to Owen Farrell. Who would you two go for?
Same, completely the same.
Well,
and do you think there's any other candidates?
Yes, absolutely.
Marrow has been brilliant.
Haskell and Robshaw, I think, have both been brilliant.
Been outstanding.
Hartley as captain made the right decisions pretty much every time.
Yeah,
it's not like the Clive Woodward thing, isn't it? Improve 100 things by 1% type. That's how I feel England have gone this time around.
I'm going to have to do this live on the podcast. I apologise. Carry on chatting because I've JB's just been filling me with coffee and tea, and I've got to go.
You go, Tim. You go. We can hold the fort.
Go.
Interesting question.
Such a professional broadcaster.
Naturally, he could have snuck off and just left us chatting, but now everyone knows that he's gone.
Such an
little boys.
That he has to demonstrate his weak bladder for all of our listeners. My point being, right, is that Owen Farrell can only do what he does with good ball, and for that reason, it's got to be man of the series has to be someone within the pack.
Okay.
But who that is? I mean, can you give it to the pack in general?
The full, all eight plus the six subs.
Yeah, if I give you a list of names, tell me if it's man of the series candidate, Billy Vunipola.
I thought he was inconsistent. His good stuff was brilliant. I thought he missed too many tackles and he dropped too many balls.
Interesting. Rob Shaw?
He's got to be in the conversation. Him and Haskell were sensational.
See, I think Billy was absolutely... he's back. I think Billy was absolutely sensational.
I think
Rob Shaw was good. I thought Haskell was good. Mario is Mario. George Cruz, as good as he is, and this shows how well they played, probably played a little bit below the rest of the pack.
Cruz was probably a little bit almost anonymous because of all the hard work he did and because he was just solid. He didn't miss any tackles, or didn't miss many tackles. He was just consistent and solid all round. I thought Mako in the final test was sensational.
Yeah, and totally led the whole thing.
Prize-winning Mako.
As for Dan Cole, I'm still not 100% sold.
I thought that was the best I've seen him play in a long time, Dan Cole.
Yeah.
And I'm not a massive Dan Cole fan.
I'm not a massive fan. And if he plays like that forever and a day now, he's going to be a very, very high-level international. Danger you have is you've already got lots of tape of him not playing like that.
Yeah.
So is it an inconsistency problem?
Well, does he, having Hartley alongside him, who's pretty much as tall and as big as him, to scrummage, rather than having someone shorter like Tom Youngs or like, what's the
Harry
name?
Thacker
at Leicester, that seems to make a difference. I don't know if that is the thing, but something has made a difference to both his scrummaging and also his all-round play.
Maybe it's Neil Hatley.
Maybe. Who knows?
Do you want to know some gossip for London Irish? New coach, any idea who it might be? I think everyone assumed it would be Glenn Delaney.
I would have liked him last year to have been director of rugby.
Okay. Apparently, it's going to be England under-20s coach.
Martin Haag.
That's the one.
So, another one of... Well, yeah. That'd be a great appointment.
Do you know anything about Martin Haag? Tell us all.
So, prior to England under-20s, he took the job that Glenn Delaney vacated as director of rugby at Nottingham to go to London Irish. Nottingham have been a fantastic place, a fantastic team in the Championship.
Yep.
Against teams with much bigger budgets.
Yeah.
And much higher caliber players, they've always been very competitive. Glenn Delaney led that, and then Martin Haag's done absolutely fantastically at Nottingham to the extent that he got the under 20 job. So, and I know from London Irish, they're massive fans of forwards being in charge. They don't like backs.
Brendan Venter was there and did such a good job for them.
Smith before that. They're much, for some reason, this is what I understand, they much prefer forwards being head honcho.
Interesting. I can see why you'd want that, though.
I suppose it's like where a lot of people in rugby prefer a forward being the captain than a back. I don't know.
I would like to go through the list of directors of rugby and work out what the split is backs to forwards. Because I bet it's fairly favourable to forwards.
Probably. Well, Cockers.
Dimes.
Dean Richards.
Yeah.
Dean Ryan.
Yeah. Mike Ford was a rugby league back, wasn't he?
Mike Ford on a back, so that's 4-1. O'Shea was, and now who have Quinn's got? Well, let's take Conor O'Shea from last season.
They got their forwards coach. So, yeah, take Conor O'Shea from last season. So he was a fullback, wasn't he?
Two backs.
Malinder
back. Die Young. Live Fast, Die Young.
Yeah. Forward.
Oh,
forward.
Was he forward?
Yeah. Can't believe I answered that. what other teams have we got? London Irish forward.
Mark McCall. Was he a back?
Mark McCall.
Was he a flanker?
I don't know.
I thought was he an outside back?
No idea. Here's how I think.
Anyway, Copley, there's definitely a majority forwards.
So here's how I think you should do it, right? Your head coach should be a forward. Your director of rugby should be a back. Because you need someone who's a bit more intelligent up top as like the director of rugby, you know, to do contracts and colouring in and stuff.
That's such a stereotype that forwards aren't intelligent.
Well, they know what's expected at from the playing side, shall we say. There's a little bit more grit to them. So having them as a head coach, that's your dream team.
Mark McCall, what position was he?
I'm going to go flanker, but I don't know.
I would have said inside centre.
Inside centre is correct.
There you go.
Very good.
Just only to look at the guy, that's all. That's the only reason I based that on, but there you go.
Steve Hansen was also an inside centre.
Was he?
Steve, let's not get on Steve Hansen again.
Doesn't look like an inside centre so much.
Yeah.
Steve Hansen ever played competitive rugby, like at high level?
No, I don't think he did.
Something going on with that guy.
Eddie Jones and Cech were both, they're both Hookers? Forwards, aren't they?
Yeah.
Hooker and number eight.
Gats was Hooker? A forward. Hooker.
Hooker.
So international coaches seem to be overwhelmingly forwards as well.
Yeah.
Well, what's Schmidt?
Schmidt and Venter. I don't know. Schmidt looks like a back, doesn't he? He's very quite slim.
Yeah. And Venter played in the backs like a forward.
Hmm.
I think he's a tough guy.
Yeah, that's true. Here's one. Just because we touched on the England-Australia, it was great to see him, Matt Timur, in, and Leicester fans will be very happy to see him. He's also a very, very satisfying Aussie player to say in an Aussie accent.
I've got to say to him,
Matt Timur.
Timur.
I've got to disagree with you there, mate. What? It's not as good as Tamani.
No, it's not as good as... And that's what I was going to say. What is, once and for all, the best Aussie name to say in an Aussie accent?
Tamani.
Joe Tamani.
Oh, Fardy's glorious.
Scott Fardy. It's very good.
How would Jonathan Spratt say forward doing an Australian accent?
Oh, bloody hell. Oh, what? No, I can't do it. Can't do it.
That's a tricky one.
Have a think about that one.
I will. I'll get back to you on that one. But it was pointed out by Rawls on Twitter. He always laughs the way Clive Woodward. He can't say, for some reason, he doesn't say Matt Timur. He calls him Matt Pumba.
Does he?
Yeah, he kind of does. I like Nick Easter. He's quite good. Like his inputs.
Yeah,
Easter's a smart guy. Good old Minty. Easter.
Yeah, he is a smart guy. It was interesting during the World Cup. When he was kind of on the periphery of the squad, made it late.
Yeah.
But every time you saw a huddle, it seemed like he was leading the charge. He was kind of giving more input to the boys than just about anyone else.
Well, he's been around the block. I think
he has.
He's an intelligent guy. He's a thoughtful guy. It does make sense. And I think he's going to have a very important role next year in Quinn's.
Well, it's interesting because he's been coaching Wimbledon, hasn't he? Wimbledon rugby for the last couple of years.
Has he?
And he's been working his coaching badges. So... It will be interesting, another forward potential head coach or director of rugby.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see where he goes.
Mm. Just to fill you in, boys, not only have I been so unprofessional that I ducked off to go for a tinkle a minute ago, I've just got a text from the missus.
Would they tolerate this in Virgin Radio? Or
well,
Mid-segue.
I know this is terrible, isn't it? Well, because I'm covering the breakfast show on Virgin Radio in the morning, I'm getting a train down today, not tomorrow.
Oh, are you?
And my train is an hour earlier than I thought.
Oh dear.
So, uh-oh.
Do we need to go quick?
I might just have to leave you guys to finish it off.
Well, we're 41
really
minutes
sorry
in.
About
we've
that.
We've done Ireland, we've done Wales, we've done a bit of...
So the three things that I want to do now, I want to very briefly touch on Japan-Scotland, which should then lead into, if we were picking a Lions team tomorrow, who would we pick?
All right.
And then I've got a little, who am I? So if we get those three done, then me and Jay can wrap up.
All right, well, fair enough. And the one thing I want to add to that is we've all enjoyed Will Griggs on fire so much during the football. That Tom Biggs for Worcester and Neil Briggs for Sale Sharks.
Yeah.
You have to get those chants going. Neil Briggs on fire. Your defence is terrified. Please, come on.
I thought of one, which was Dave Ward's on fire. His own line-out's terrified.
One of my all-time favourite things was when we went to the Bath Quinns game, watching, and giving Dave Ward a load of crap when he was warming up the line out. The first one, just our group of friends, 12 of us, all went, "Ooh," and he missed it. And then the second one, the whole Bath stand.
Unopposed to Charlie Matthews. I liked, remember Ben Evans, the prop for Sale? He was warming up once, and it was in Stockport, and props like to hit the post protector, right?
Yeah.
So he was warming up and he's hitting the post protector, and everyone's going, "Ooh," and he hit the post protector slightly off, and the post protector span round, which means he just went straight past the post protector, straight onto his arse.
Oh, amazing. And also, before you get into that final one, just on the because there was a top 14 final, and you guys can maybe touch on that later, but the Blazers, incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Matt Merritt tweeted at Rugby Podcast to say, next season it won't just be the Blazers over the top of the rugby shirts, it'll be mustard chinos instead of shorts.
Should be. It's going that way. I think Roger Federer taught us all a very important lesson in sports sartorial wear.
That's a great shout. And Liam Townsend said... the half-time oysters need to be added instead of half-time
and
oranges.
Bubbles and some champagne.
Well, bit of a history lesson for you. Apparently, Biarritz used to have a full Sunday lunch involving a brisket before playing on a Sunday when they used to play amateur.
That's like Ricky Hatton's fry-up before a fight, wasn't it?
Mm. Was it?
Yeah, that was his pre-fight ritual.
Psychopaths.
Yeah.
Go on then. Let's get on with what you want to do.
So just briefly touch on Scotland-Japan. Scotland won narrowly, 5 points. 21-16, Scotland didn't score a try. It was seven kicks to the only try of the game, if you've seen that, was absolutely superb.
Amazing try.
80 metres, touchline to touchline, finished off by the scrum half, the Japanese scrum half.
Do we agree that might be the best try of maybe the last 5 years?
Well, that's a big. It's probably the best try in this tournament. Although there have been some very good ones.
Oh, come on! It was from underneath their own sticks. The hands were superb. It was a great try. It is an all-time great try.
It was. It's on par. Superb try.
I think, as someone on Twitter asked us, I think, imagine if that was in the 1970s and they were wearing Barbarians tops, we would never stop talking about it.
It was pretty special.
That's true.
It was special. It was special. Scotland would just be happy to get away with two wins. Job done. But it. Yeah. It wasn't convincing. But then again, Japan are a force on the rise.
Yeah, they've got some good players and more players now getting experience of Super Rugby, not just in Japan, also in some of the New Zealand and Australian teams. Have you heard of this boy, Hugh Jones?
No.
Welsh name, Scotland international, but is playing his rugby in South Africa. So... as a 18-year-old or 19-year-old, went to study in South Africa and got picked up, I think, whichever the team that feeds into the Stormers. Is it Western? Anyway, whichever team feeds in, started playing for that, played for a local team, got picked up by them, and then now started playing for the Stormers and has just been capped by Scotland. So quite an interesting and unusual route.
A little bit like Matt, if Matt Simons made it to England International, him... being an amateur player, going to New Zealand, becoming a big deal at the Chiefs, and then
So quite an interesting story, and it will be interesting to see whether he stays and kind of gets more Super Rugby experience, which can never be a bad thing for a home nation's player, or whether he comes back.
I'm really sorry, my train goes in 45 minutes.
Is that it, Tim?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go.
Go.
I'm really sorry, I cannot wait to hear what you're going to pick as your Lions team off the back. If you were picking a Lions team next week off the back of those matches. And I can only apologise, I got the time wrong. I'm really sorry.
Oh, no problem at all.
Right, mate. Catch
enjoy.
In a week.
Yeah.
In a bit. Bye-bye.
See you, Tim.
Right, well, let's scrap the Who Am I, because I've got no one to play against. let's fire straight into this Lions team. Oh, actually, let's just say France beat Argentina. They nilled Argentina.
Yeah, in Argentina, what was it, 27-0?
Yeah, give me some information on the Argentina thing.
It was, well, obviously a France team without any of their Racing or Toulon players. I'm not even sure if they had any Clermont players or who are the others.
Such a joke.
Cast players.
The whole thing is such a joke. Well, I've got Christian Day on Rugby Dungeon I've got him on this Monday, so that will come out next week. And one of the things we're going to talk about is length of season, because there is no way it is good for these French players to be playing up until now, and then if you've just finished your final, get on a plane and play somewhere else.
Yeah.
Now, France have only got two games, though, on their tour.
Yes, that's their tour done. But the players who played in the final, their pre-season will presumably start in about 2 weeks' time.
It has to.
Yeah.
It has to, because they start earlier.
Because they, yeah.
Oh, my God. It's just brutal. I don't know what's more brutal, though. That, or the fact that they managed to nail Argentina. Bearing in mind that France haven't been particularly good of late. They're missing all of their players, and they're playing against a team which are pretty, they're pretty regular. They all play together.
Yeah, virtually all of them play. I mean, Kubeli came in from the Brumbies, but not many others, I think, came in. Because two of their best players, Imhoff and Fernandez Lobby were playing in the final, weren't they?
Yeah, okay, fine. I get that. But how
long? It's only two players. The rest of them were all there.
Yeah, and how long can Fernandez Lobby be one of their best players?
Not much longer now.
I mean, they've got to move on and they've got to find something else in this whole thing.
Fernandez Lobby is an unusual player because he's a flanker, but he's not like a brute force. He's not a blunt instrument. He's very much an intelligent, handling player. He's an all-round player rather than someone who just relies on his physical attributes. So he can probably keep going for a few years, but not indefinitely.
Mm. I think he's 32 now, or 33.
He's more than that, I think.
So they need to move on. They need to discover a little bit more talent, unless they believe that the crop of players coming through the Jaguares, who are getting battered every week, both out on the town and on the field,
yeah,
are actually going to do a job. From what I've seen, I'm not entirely sure that they will.
Well, it almost feels like the Jaguares has been counterproductive because they're playing such a loose style of rugby. If they'd have played the Argentinian international way, which is still using the backs but using a very controlled forward dominated game, play the territory to get to the right parts of the pitch and then play rugby, then that could have developed the national side, but they've not been playing like that at all.
What happened to the Argentina that we saw in the World Cup that battered Ireland?
Yeah, good question.
That's what I'd ask.
Good question.
Anyway. Right. You mentioned Imhoff. Do you want to touch on the top 14 final?
Well, I've seen the red card, but I've not really seen anything else.
I saw the game. It was magnificent.
So I'm a bit annoyed about this because it was my final night on holiday. All I said, I wanted to watch the game, and we had a vote for everyone who was there. There's 12 of us, and we had two votes, in fact, referendum style, and both of them were scenarios that were voted for, which allowed me to watch the game. And then, little known to me, my girlfriend, my horrible, selfish...
She's so selfish.
...manipulating girlfriend...
That's the one, yeah.
...fiancé, even, went round and independently spoke to everyone and got them to change their votes. So... At the end of the day, I didn't even know until 45 minutes before the game was about to start that we were doing something that did not allow me to watch the rugby.
What did you do?
Unfortunately, I went along with it and didn't watch the rugby.
You're such a coward. You deserve everything you get.
So annoyed. Anyway, I've only seen the red card, so I can't comment on the rest of it.
All right, so the red card, one of those things, yes, it was a red card, 100%, it shouldn't have been. You know, the laws should not say it's a red card. But it is a red card in the laws. So, you know, let's get over that.
Okay.
That's fine. What happened next was quite incredible. So, Racing won the game. It is magnificent to see Joe Rokokoku still playing at that level.
I have seen his try.
Oh, what? I mean, I don't think it was his try, actually. I think it was... was it not Goosen's try? It was a chip for him.
Yeah.
But, you know...
But the one that he finished it off, didn't he?
Yeah. Just everything about that team... is getting quite impressive now. I mean, they've always had the power, and it felt like earlier on in the season they were a team who had some talented backs and they'd kind of muddle through.
Yeah.
Now they feel really dangerous. Goosen is class at 13.
Yeah.
Again, I thought that was just a round peg in a square hole.
Yeah, yeah.
Far from it.
I thought he was kind of a fly half, and then he's gone across, he's played a lot of 15 and played a bit of 13. It's interesting to see where he will end up eventually, because he's not old at all, is he?
No, I just think he's a genuinely very talented player. And also, you know, you look at the options that both these teams have for Southern Hemisphere internationals who don't play in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
Admittedly, two of them are injured, but there was Juan Smith, I know, or John Smith. What was it? Juan Smith?
Juan Smith. Juan Smith. John Smith.
John, yeah, that's a completely different kind of fisher. Now, I know he's long retired, but everyone in Toulon raves about just how good he is as a leader, as a rugby player, just his natural rugby strength. And then, of course, you've got the small issue of the number eight. What's his face? He didn't play.
Vermaelen.
And then Goosen. So they've got all of these players. The game itself, they put Imhoff to 9.
Yeah, I saw that.
And he started terribly. But then he did really well.
So, I can't imagine he's ever played 9 as professional before.
I have no idea what his background is, but the first few passes looked distinctly shaky. After that, they sort of regathered themselves. And yeah, it's just an all-round gritty, impressive performance. On the other hand, you look at Toulon, I think they are missing a shed load of players. They were missing Nonu, Vermaelen, Smith, Smith, or whatever his name is. It was impressive. The Toulon team which was out was full of big names, but it just wasn't enough.
Yeah.
And there's going to be big changes in Toulon next year.
Well, people are going, aren't they?
Lots of people going. Memoirs will almost certainly go. They've got a whole new coaching team and back row team coming in.
Quade Cooper's going to go, isn't he?
I don't know the exact destination of Quade Cooper.
I thought he was going back to the Reds, or it's been talked about that he was going back to the Reds.
I've not heard anything for certain. Obviously, the two... is it Armitage, if you're talking about both of them?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, the two Armitage have left. And the coaching team is going to consist of basically the Stade Francais team from a couple of years ago.
Brought across.
Yeah, Dominguez. Their new acquisition, their new talent acquisition guy is also Stade Francais guy. So he's bringing across basically the whole team.
Okay.
So whereas Laporte doesn't do any coaching until Thursday, they're now going to have a whole team of actual coaches. So they're going to be terrifying. 15?
British and Irish Lions.
Yep, go on then, fire away.
To start a test tomorrow.
Yep.
Loose head prop.
Mako.
Yeah, I'd go for that. Hooker.
Hartley.
Fairly easy. Tight head.
Cole.
I'd probably go WP Nell.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He was superb in the Six Nations. I've not seen the proper Japan-Scotland game, but I like WP Nell.
Reasonable. Second row?
I'll probably repeat what I've said in the past, which is, if it was a test tomorrow, I would probably start Cruis and Alan Wynne-Jones with Itoje on the bench.
I would go with Itoje and Alan Wynne, but I could easily go for Itoje and Cruis.
And also someone like Hendo.
Yeah.
Who, he can play six. Indeed, he played six a bit on this tour.
Why would you not play him six? Who is better than him at six?
Arguably CJ Stander. Good question. CJ Stander probably is a better six because he's a more destructive runner.
I don't know.
Hendo is very good in the loose, though.
He's very good in the loose. He's an absolute warrior. I mean, you look at the semi-final of the Pro 12, he was magnificent.
Yeah.
He's just a very, very good player. I think you need him in the team for leadership. He's a big game player. I definitely... In fact, I've talked myself into having him six because I'd take him over Robshaw. He's got the same work rate. He's probably more physical. Let's not even talk about the Welsh six options. It's not important. Has Scotland got anything of interest?
Not really.
I mean, for a position which historically every team has lots of, it's not that strong, really.
Yeah.
So Henderson at six, eight.
I would personally go Billy just over Talupe, and I'd probably have Talupe on the bench.
I'd 100% go with Faletau.
Faletau and then bring Billy off the bench as a battering ram off the bench. I could happily go for that option.
And seven?
Based on this tour, I'd almost be tempted to go Haskell. If Sean O'Brien could get some semblance of fitness, I'd be tempted.
Let's give up on that now. Let's give up on Sean O'Brien as a force in international rugby.
I would be half tempted for Warburton. But Warburton, I don't think he's done himself any favours in this tour. From what I've seen, he's not been particularly impressive. I mean, he played in the Chiefs battering, didn't he?
I'm going to go for Warburton out of a misguided sense of loyalty.
Okay.
But I could happily go with...
with the Hask, DJ Hask.
Yeah. So, nine?
Probably Webb.
Yeah, definitely Webb. 10?
It depends where you're going to play Farrell. I would probably put Farrell at 12, given how well he's played, and then I would put Sexton at 10 still, even though I've not seen him in this...
Having Farrell in your team basically means that you've got no use for Bigger. And having Bigger in your team basically means you've got no need for Farrell.
Yes, because they're both close to 90% kickers.
Yeah. So you've got to think, who is the best 10?
Sexton, for me, is the best 10. Still.
I disagree with that. Disagree with that strongly. I would probably go with... I don't know, actually. I'll leave 10. It's not Sexton. It's either Farrell or it's Bigger.
I would rather have Farrell as a 12.
Well, no, because you've got so many others. The reason you put Farrell in at 12 is because England have no real...
inside it, centre, yeah.
But then you've got McClure, you've got all the Irish 12s.
Henshaw, yeah.
You've got Roberts.
Yeah.
You've got Mark Bennett. You've got, you know... Whoever.
But Bennett's a 13, really.
Yeah, but you've got whoever you want. So,
okay, okay, let's go for Farrell at 10.
Or bigger.
Let's go Farrell.
Let's go bigger.
Okay, Farrell or bigger.
Okay.
But Farrell. And then Henshaw and... Jonathan Joseph or Jonathan Davis?
I think Jonathan Davis is a better all-round player. I think Joseph is a little bit of a one-trick pony, but it's a very good one-trick pony. It's one hell of a trick he's got.
And some of his defence in that final test, both the tests, he was getting a lot of boys running down his channel and he never took a backward step.
Yeah, I can see Joseph. I wouldn't have any problem with Joseph.
Yeah.
I do think Davis is the more destructive of the two overall. What about Luke Marshall?
He's a very good player.
Such a, I'd like to see what they make of him once they get him into an atmosphere and environment with all the potential players, and then see how good he is.
Yeah,
because I seriously rate him. And he wears a scrum hat too, so he's, he's interchangeable with Jonathan Davis. Basically, the same player.
Basically,
and that little deft chip he put in the first test shows he's got more. Yeah, he's more than just a runner.
Yeah, yeah, he is more than just a runner.
And some of Jonathan Davis's passing as well. Some of his last passing is not what I would describe as stellar.
Yes. Yeah, that is true.
Wings, but North.
North, yeah.
Obviously.
I'd probably go Watson just for his finishing potential.
Uh-huh.
They'd be my... Yeah, North and Watson would be my two.
And the fullback?
I would go Jared Payne.
What about Liam Williams?
Liam Williams is absolutely superb, actually.
I think I'd look at Liam... I'm going to give you a guy to put in that team, right? And he's not played international rugby this tour.
Okay.
But I'm confident he's going to be right in the reckoning coming up to the Lions tour and Six Nations.
Go on.
Miles Benjamin. No, Sean Maitland.
I'm not so sure. So obviously going to Saracens will be massive for him. And it'll be interesting to see because the wings this year, the starting wings have been Wiles and Ashton.
Mm-hmm.
Ashton, a few more years left in. Wiles is like 32, 33.
Yeah.
So they're bringing Maitland as a, probably I see as a direct replacement for Wiles.
He's massive. He's talented. He's fast. He's strong. There's
bad attitude.
He's got a bad attitude in a losing team.
Yeah.
If you put him in a winning team, he might be a good egg.
Maybe.
It must be very frustrating.
Yeah. It's interesting that... Because
Saracens are all about character and team building. He might flourish there.
I hope he does, because he has got so much talent. But it's interesting that he never made it for New Zealand. Because it was him and Guildford were kind of the two. And Guildford...
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Was the one who made it. They were both about the same age. They were both coming through at the same time. And Guildford made the international team despite his obvious shortcomings off the field. And Maitland didn't.
How dysfunctional must that Canterbury team have been? How hard is Dan Carter working just to keep them like indoors after seven?
Carter, McCaw, Reed.
One of them turns up on an island naked and bloody, and that's the one that made it.
Yeah, that story is the most ridiculous. A tiny little island, population of about 2,000, and there's a wedding going on.
Is
there
that Sean Maitland?
No, it's the other one. It's Guildford.
Oh, Guildford, sorry. Yeah, of course. Got kicked out of Clare one. Now at the Warriors, I was trying to resurrect his career.
Yeah. Yeah. So Maitland possibly But on the current form, I would say obviously not.
Liam Williams for me, or I'd put him on. Liam Williams is just such an important line breaker, and we know he can play against the All Blacks.
I'll tell you, someone whose stock has fallen in this bout of international matches as a winger, someone who a lot of people were saying should be starting for England, Christian Wade.
Because of his performances in South Africa?
Yeah. He looked all at sea in South Africa.
He might be another example of PSB syndrome.
Too talented to be good.
Correct.
Yeah.
Why would you bother working on the things that you're not good at when you're so good at one thing? why?
If you want to play international rugby, you've got to. You cannot be a one-trick pony at international rugby.
John Aloma was a one-trick pony. And he's the best of all time.
Yeah. His one trick was... It was a little bit better at the time than Christian Wade's is.
I'm just saying, if you're that talented... If you live in a world where you can score 5 tries in one game against fellow professionals, men that are paid to stop you scoring tries, why wouldn't you think that you can just mosey on up to the England team and do it? Why?
Indeed. I did see... it was either Instagram or Twitter from Christian Wade last week, so he's just got back from South Africa, and it was a picture of him with, you know, those flat American-style baseball caps, like the enormous ones with a flat peak.
He's wearing
one of those, a big baggy T-shirt, some skinny jeans or whatever he was wearing, and it was hashtag Ibiza 2016. Yeah, that's about right.
Well, remember, it would be his second Lions tour.
It would be
Christian Wade, two times Lion tourists.
Yeah, God, there were some odd call ups to that Lions tour. Brad Barrett, Billy 12 Trees.
Did Brad go?
Brad definitely went. Yeah.
Are you sure?
I'm sure he did.
12 Trees got called up because he was on holiday there.
He wasn't on holiday. Brad Barrett, wasn't he in America?
And I don't know,
Argentina, and he got flown across.
I'm not sure, but 12 Trees was on holiday there. A lot of
Tommy Court.
Yeah, a lot of players weirdly
Shane Williams, because he was in Japan
They weirdly go on holiday exactly where the Lions is, which I think is a strange decision. It's almost rubbing your face in it. I think if you're Rob Shaw, you don't go near it because you think, look, I've got no chance. It just makes gonna make me feel terrible about myself. I'm an awful human. I don't need to do this. Whereas if you're miles below the standard, like Tom Court, why not take a chance and follow the team bus around Australia?
Yeah. Brad Barrett did go. I'm not sure if he was a call-up or what. I've just got the players here. Shane Williams, Christian Wade, Tom Court, Billy 12 Trees, Brad Barrett, all called up. Matt Stevens. Yeah, there were some odd ones.
Indeed there was. Right. Enough of this podcasting malarkey. This was our second podcast. Obviously, you've heard our first podcast, which was with the Green and Gold Boys. Hope you enjoyed that. You can find us on Acast. Subscribe to that because apparently it's very important. Leave us a review on iTunes. That's equally, if not more so important, I've heard. And you can follow our podcast at Rugby Podcast, or if you type in Egg Chasers, you'll find us there. Until next week, when we'll only have one podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
See you later, Phil.
Cheers, JB.
Bye-bye.